All right, we are live. Welcome to Mad Gains. Bienvenido en otro episodio de Mad Gains Live in vivo in Mexico. Estoy en Mexico. Yes, I have left Scottsdale, Arizona, and I wish you guys could see behind me. Hi, John. I have the ocean, but my shit-ass webcam won't pick up the ocean. I really wanted you guys to be jealous. Don't be afraid. Go to Mexico, social distance by the sea. Get out of your house. I was going to lose my mind, so I came here. I have a co-host today, Michael Caney, just in case my internet cuts out or I get too drunk from my Dos Equis. I am going to be in Mexico City next weekend, and then I'm going to be in Guatemala. So all yous who follow us and you're in Central America, you can join me on our journeys. I'm going to be visiting facilities, going to be making some extra podcasts, got some lot of exciting stuff coming your way. This episode is, yes, it's about non-competes. It's not about Mexico. It is sponsored by OTR Capital, my favorite factoring company, and they do have a team of Mexican-speaking, Spanish-speaking people who can help you out, and other languages as well. OTR Capital does not mess around with fees. They don't share your data. They don't play games. They treat you like family. You also have Swan Leap, one of my favorite software companies for your TMS. If you click the link in the description, you get 6 months free, people. So click the link, try out their TMS. I like it. It has good reporting capabilities. It's flexible. Your shippers are already set up with it. It's a good software. Check it out. Give me feedback. Now, on to the show. We're going to talk about the job market. We're going to talk about non-competes. I think we have, let's see, three amazing guests with us. All have been on this show in the past. We're going to start with Brent, who's going to open up by giving us, this is what the job market looks like right now. Hopefully I'm hearing it's fucking awesome, but I'll let you tell us, Brent.
Well, that is definitely one way to put it, but it's an accurate statement at the same time. So, you know, we did this, I think, back in April, and no one really kind of knew what was going to go on. The remote dynamic was kind of still there. But, you know, what happened from April to really June, everyone thinned up. I think no one's naive to that. We all saw it. You know, but back when, around July, when freight started to come back, we saw it go crazy on the operations side, right? So the demand that we saw for carrier reps, account managers, anybody that could service the accounts was like 10x. It was insane because, again, everyone thinned up too much. That trend is still out there. Like, I know that any candidates that are watching this, we know they're getting bombarded. Like, it's crazy how much activity there really is. But now we're also seeing it in two different spectrums. Number one, you're going to see the activity on the sales side. And what's crazy right now is like freight is there, right? Just look at the stats, look at kind of what a crazy, even Q4 it's been. So sales reps are back in demand though. And it's really less like hunting for new business as much as like just, hey, the freight's there. We're in the doors. Go chase it. Go get it. So that's been pretty impactful to see as well. And then a lot of the technology, you know, it's here. Like, you guys all see the private equity money coming back into the game. And it's literally just to get talent. That's what that money is coming there for. So it's exciting times. You know, for me, I always look at operations as a dictator of what's really going on in the industry. So when I see that large demand out there, like, that's a really, really exciting thing for the industry as a whole.
I love that. Brian, you are our guru on non-competes. Ooh. You're our amazing attorney. You've been fighting the company that I get so angry at, the three-letter company I get so angry about with their non-competes.
Not a four-letter, a three-letter.
Three-letter people. So what's been new since the last time we spoke? Are you still out there fighting non-competes? What do we need to know?
Oh, yeah.
Are they still enforceable? Have you conquered that yet?
I haven't conquered it yet, but they are still enforceable. So let's start with that as a baseline. You know, I've heard as recently as earlier this week, well, I work in an at-will state, and that means they can't enforce a non-compete, right? No, that's not what it means. Let's start with that baseline. So because you're in an at-will state does not mean that a non-compete doesn't apply. And non-competes can potentially still be enforceable so long as they're reasonably and appropriately tailored. What I continue to tell clients, and Brent, this will sound familiar, is the same thing I said back here in April, which is, frankly, I do not recommend to clients that they do a blanket non-compete, because I think it's a good way, especially in COVID world, to get a judge upset with you and to get your teeth kicked in and get an otherwise enforceable employment agreement tossed out. I think the most effective way to tackle this, to protect your company, to protect the brokers, to protect the asset-backed companies, and that they can make sure that they're watching their backs, is to use a general restrictive covenant, to use non-solicitation agreements, protect the clients, protect specific clients, protect clients with whom employees do business or they know your company's doing business. That courts are going to respect that. We all make investments. My law firm, we make investments in relationships with our clients. You know, Brent, Michael, Cassandra, we've all made investments in relationships with people with whom we do business, right?
Yeah.
And we expect the people who we employ to be loyal and respectful of that. Well, my brokerage clients expect that. My asset-based company clients expect that. And guess what? The losses are entitled to it. But where judges get heartburn, especially in tough economic times, and while things are still pretty good economically in some sectors of the market, they're not. Judges are going to be less and less willing to do a blanket non-compete for 5 years in the continental United States. And a lot of times that's what I see in the transpo industry is 5 years in the continental US. Well, that's a big, big mountain to climb. That's a big mountain to climb.
I think that when
really
we have
5 year agreements.
Oh yeah. I'm dealing with one right now, Michael. Yeah, 100%. 5 years.
I
see 2 years a lot.
Contracts. That's insane.
Yeah. That's nuts. 2 years, you know, judges are going to probably buy that. 18, you know, it's weird. It's like there's this magic in that extra
yeah,
6 months.
18 months.
Yeah. Right? 18 months, judges are like, oh, no, that's cool. That, yeah, you're pretty good there. You get the 2 years, yeah. And it's like, whoa, wait. No. It's, you know, there's just something magical about that extra 6 months. So,
yeah.
Listen, at the end of the day, my take is, and I, this is something that if I have any clients on here, it's going to sound familiar. You know, if you can't rebuild and reestablish a relationship in 18 months, you're not doing it in 24.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, day one, when that employee leaves, you better have somebody else picking up the phone. And, you know, if Brent's the customer, somebody better be picking up the phone, calling Brent saying, hey, buddy, I know Michael was your guy. I'm your guy. I got you. Let's figure out how we can make this work.
Yeah. Yep. So there's a lot I want to get into because I think non-competes touch a lot that have nothing to do with with legal stuff, like have nothing to do with legal stuff. Right. Like somebody's got a culture problem, a leadership problem. And one of the things I've seen, Brian, I don't know if you have, is that a lot of times the way that agreements are written, changed, drafted, implemented, they're reactionary. Have enough in place, 5 people leave, they call you and go, so somebody's got it's the wrong tool, right? People say surgeons want to cut, like lawyers want to either draft agreements or go to the courthouse, right? I mean, that's how you make money. So like using a lawyer to fix a problem that isn't a legal problem is always a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Bravo.
But I think like one of the things you talked about, just enforceability and how they work, like, I think we probably have 3 audiences, or at least I hope we do, like young professionals that are in an agreement right now and they feel like they're stuck, or people that are shopping. I think Brent, we should probably yeah. talk about that. Like, I think what people should start doing up front. Hey, you call me. Hey, I got this great opportunity. Great, Brent. I can't wait to hear about it. Send me the non-compete they're going to ask me to sign. Like today, like before you tell me how great their culture is, mm-hmm. how many foosball tables they have, let me read what they're actually how they're actually going to try to lock my life down.
Yeah.
Well, and on the
flip side, a lot of times it's different. Like what I say I am culturally versus what I try to do to people legally are 2 completely different things.
Yeah. And I would even say, Michael, sorry, Brent, just give me, I would even say, Michael, that agreement is a reflection. Mm-hmm. That is a reflection of the culture.
Yeah. So Ron has a good question. And so back to my audience, right? So I hope there's senior leaders that are listening that are thinking about if they're making a job transition, how to negotiate their next deal, call somebody like Brent or Brian, or if you're thinking about like what you should be enforcing or asking people like ethically, I think we should talk about that. Probably some mid-level managers and then like young professionals, right? So you touched on it, Brian, but could you just talk about like non-compete is a catch-all?
Yeah.
Like somebody, like I've had 2 different agreements before. I've had like my executive like employment contract and then covenants. So I've typically seen like four things, like non-disclosure, non-solicit, non-interference, and then true non-competition.
Yeah. Confidential trade secret.
Yeah.
So really there's kind of about five different, Michael, you caught four. And then there's the catch all about confidential, proprietary, quote, trade secret information. But all those fit in there. You know, frankly, at the end of the day, you know, you've got some states in the country that basically are just going to say non-competes in general, gone, get them out of here. We're not going to do it. Most states, frankly, I haven't seen a state yet that won't enforce to some reasonable degree.
Right.
And again, some reasonable degree, right? Words matter when you say that, that would enforce confidential, proprietary, trade secret type stuff, non-disclosure type stuff, and non-solicits. Because again, we recognize that, you know, there's business investment that goes into all that stuff, and it's wrong for the ex-employee to go and use that for somebody else's benefit. So courts are that's going to resonate. But when you get these really broad-based, nationwide, multi-year deals, judges don't like that stuff. Very simple.
No, they don't. And I don't think employers understand that it's poorly written and expensive to deal. Right. So maybe we talk about like the basics of how this works. Like, it can be a bad agreement, but if I'm the employer, I can still go down and get my TRO and shut somebody down for 2 weeks. Right.
Yep.
Then we have to go have a conversation and get in a pissing contest. You're spending unnecessary money. Like, I think we should really talk about like, what is reasonable, right, to hold people accountable to? And then the other thing is this, a friend of mine knew I was coming on the show. He said, hey, you know, what do you think about this? So nefarious acts don't happen when they quit. Like, if somebody's going to leave your business, that emotional, cultural degradation started way before Brent called them and tried to recruit them. Like, they started, like, they were printing shit off the TMS. They were calling their buddy going, hey, I have a non-compete. But if you call them, then a judge is going to be way more apt to enforce violation of trade secrets, tortious interference, than you trying to lock some 25-year-old kid down from working.
That's
and
right.
Like, all the bad stuff happens before they quit. So I really think non-competition agreements below the executive level, I really think they should go away. Like, hands down, should go away. Non-solicit, don't steal my customers, don't steal my employees, fine. But like, anybody that thinks they're going to leave and go do something different, they didn't go, I'm going to quit my job today and figure out how to take my customer. That does not happen.
Well, and Michael, I want to touch on that, because I think the biggest issue that happens out there is these younger generation, they honestly have no idea what they're signing. You have to understand a couple of things. Number one, they get this documentation in their new hire paperwork, right? So it's like, here's your direct deposit form, you know, figure out what benefits you want. Oh, by the way, we're going to screw you for 2 years. They have no idea. The other issue is this, like, think about this. What happens if somebody knows they have a document, or I know they have a document? Why is it that they can't go to their HR department and say, hey, can I get a version of what I signed? You know exactly what happened and do that. Antennas go up, all of a sudden, they're the bad guy, right? Like, that's ridiculous in itself that they cannot ask for that document.
Yeah. That's a bad policy to not provide it. I mean, what reasonable employer is going to say, no, you can't have an agreement that, by the way, as I've seen in a lot of these agreements, you know, the ex-employee has an obligation to notify any new employer about the agreement, but yet you won't give them a copy of the agreement because you're right. It was like, oh, here's my I-9, here's my W-2, and yeah, there's that agreement. Okay, I'm good to go. Now, you said I was going to be making $100,000 this year, right? Let me go. Well, now 5 years later, when you know the industry, you're moving on and they won't give you a copy of it. You bet I've attacked that fact when that's taken place.
And we just had an example last week where I know there was a candidate that he was going to go to another company, and that company, before they brought him on, asked, well, hey, can you go get a release? I'm like, that's never going to happen. Like, that, I already knew the answer, right? Because if they do it for one person, they have to do it across the board. There's no special treatment.
That's right.
And
that's
so it's like a big ask, but I'm like, there's no chance that that happens. And it puts a person in a bad situation. It's a tough call.
So how are you negotiating them, Brent? what's been your, are you asking right up front? Or are you waiting?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even me asking. Like some of the companies that we partner with, they'll literally say, like, when we send somebody over, now we've done this long enough, like we kind of know what companies are bad, who to stay away from. But literally some companies are like, hey, what did this person sign? Because that can make or break if they even get on phone call number one, yeah, right? And personally, I just probably have a copy of like 50 or 75 of these that I've accumulated over the decade. So I just know some are worse than others.
Yeah. I will tell you guys that I said it on social media, a non-compete ended my career at a company that I loved because the company tried to force me to sign a non-compete 2 years into my job when they gave me a bonus. And I said, no, thanks. So keep your bonus, even though I earned it. And then they turned around and said, actually, it's a condition of your continued employment, Cassandra. And I said to them, Brian, I said, I'm a lawyer. First, rules of ethics, I can't even sign those.
It's an ethical problem. You can't sign one.
And he said to me, I don't care. If you don't sign it, you're out the door on Friday. And I didn't sign it. And they sure as shit walked me out the door on Friday, broke my damn heart. I lost all my friends, my career. And then I started the job hunt, Brent. And I went to a company in Chicago who was looking for a general counsel. And I told them right away, I won't sign a non-compete. And they're like, oh, that's okay. That's okay. Came to offer time, sure as shit, in my paperwork was a fucking non-compete. And I came back to them and I said, no non-competes. And they went on and on and on. So even like, I ended up not taking the job because of a non-compete. So even, they're even making lawyers sign non-competes. It's out of control. And I want to add one thing. Ron Cain said in here, who, you know, he might as well just be on every show. Him and freaking Deal. So, oh, and Vitaly's in the house too. So he said, I can't remember where he said it, but he said, are there any companies, basically said, are there any companies in our industry that basically boast, we don't have a non-compete? And I expected it to be crickets when he asked that in the chat. And actually Andrew Silver popped up and said, we don't have one. And I thought, there it is. What broker will have the guts to be the first to say we have no non-compete? And how many good folks would want to go work there? And yeah, Andrew Silver, pop right up. Like, yeah, great leader he is.
Andrew, I mean, Andrew and I have had these conversations. And the biggest thing that he said was, look, if somebody doesn't want to be here and they want to go somewhere else, then I've kind of failed, right? Because I have not put them in a situation where they're going to succeed and they're going to win here. But if this isn't their environment, if this isn't where they're going to have that success, I'm not going to limit them from going down the street. So I think that's a great thing. And more leaders need to kind of take that advice because maybe it's on you why they want to leave anyways. Go look in the mirror sometime.
Yeah, and hopefully Andrew's like, okay with sharing that story.
Hey, Cassandra, I noticed another comment in here. Jeff Beckham, who's a Cincinnati guy, who's
I love Jeff.
A great leader in the industry. He did comment that they don't have a non-compete. They have a non-solicit. I can tell you I've got at least two clients of mine who are brokerage companies who do not have a non-compete, but they have non-solicits. Mm-hmm. They've listened to their counsel. They've listened to what is enforceable. And to Michael's point, what's reasonably enforceable to protect, you know, the company and to protect the investment in clients and in customers and in building relationships, rather than shutting people out of the industry altogether. I mean, that to me, that's the intention of a restrictive covenant agreement, is protect our information, protect our relationships. If you don't want to be here, fine. Maybe this isn't the place for you, but I'm not going to lock you down and lock you out.
So Brent and Brian, I want to get back to something that's really, I think, pertinent to the discussion, which is the culture and type of company that you choose to go work for, or whatever, right? So, like, I'm glad Andrew popped up. Like, I worked with Brent on a search. We talked about a lot of companies. I had a lot of interest, and Andrew talked about it on social media. He and I talked about working together. And by the way, he and I still work together in a different capacity. And I ended up talking to two companies mainly because their legal, the way that they run their company legally, modeled what they said. I talked to other companies. I've been doing this a long time, and I know how they treat people versus what they say. And I chose not to even take certain phone calls. And so I think what we have to realize is more expensive than having employees leave and do things, it's more expensive to have a culture where people work for you because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. It's more expensive to have a culture where people are saying, I wish I could leave, but if I leave, this is what happens. I hate my boss, but I don't know how to replace my income or go do this, right? I mean, Brent, how many people call you and say, I just can't? How many people have you called with a good opportunity? They don't want to do anything wrong. They don't want to steal anything. They don't want to take anything, but they feel trapped. If you ran that company, is that how you would want people sitting in your seat?
It's awful. I mean, this happens all the time. I mean, I just know these guys call me and I'm like, man, you're kryptonite. Like, there's literally nothing that we can do because I can't go call a client and say, hey, I have this person because, and then you start to get into the conversation. Well, what if I sit out a year? You know, Brian, what if I change my job title? Right? We deal with that a lot too. Well, I'm in sales now. What if they put me in account manager? Or what if they put me in an operational role? What if I hide behind LinkedIn for 6 months? All this stuff comes up.
That's the number one. What I'll do operations for a year. I won't do anything like
I worked at a company a long time ago, and like we had tons of people go work for their dad. I had no idea that so many people's dads had businesses. We're gonna work in a family business, right? And then like
whatever the family business may be.
Later, they're like everywhere.
I mean, I think something that really is important too is for me. Something that we see quite a bit is the lack of consistency, right? There's certain companies that it doesn't matter who you are, at what level, you're getting the cease and desist, you're getting the letter. But like you touched on earlier, Michael, emotion is such an important dynamic of this situation. There's companies that, you know, two people can leave at once, but they really like one individual.
Yes.
That's going to play out a different way. And that's what is very, very frustrating as far as that goes. And the worst thing that happens is when somebody leaves and you hear the company say, oh, I'm now going to make an example out of that.
Example out of them. That's exactly right. And they can pick and choose if they want to enforce.
Hang on with that concept though, Cassandra, because if companies do pick and choose, that does create a problem and that may undermine the non-compete.
Does it?
Well, I can assure you it happens all the time.
Because it does happen, Brian. It's crazy.
Again, I'm not saying it doesn't, Brent, but I can tell you that is a fact that I would, you know, cause again, I'm representing brokerages and they bring over a new employee from that three letter company that shall not be named.
Yep.
And then they bring them over and all of a sudden, you know, the three letters all over them. Right. Yep. And,
From a legal perspective, you're talking about enforceability and I totally get all that from a legal perspective, but Guy Byers is in the chat. He'll know exactly who I'm talking about. And Cassandra will know who I'm talking about. I work somewhere where troves of people left.
Yes.
And they picked a friend of mine who's one of the most ethical people I've ever known to make an example out of.
Yes,
they didn't win. But you know how much money they cost him? Because they could. Because anybody can come to you and pay you to file a lawsuit, Brian. And that's unethical. You may not win. You may tell your client you're undermining it and it's inconsistent. And it's bullshit. Because they can still file the lawsuit, drag the poor guy into court to make an example of him. Because
they scared the crap out of him, Michael. He was a kid. How old was he at the time? I mean, this was like 20s. 10 years ago. Yeah, he was just a kid, man. And he had to talk to me and deal with me. And luckily, the brokerage he was working for was stood up for him and had me. But poor guy, man. They scared the shit out of him.
But how often does that happen, Cassandra?
James, I mean, Reed is with
you know, I've had a handful of those where the broker just says, you know what? We're standing by our guy. We're standing by our gal. We're going to back him. We're going to fight this because it's bullshit that company X is going after him. But you're right. When it becomes a six figure issue and all of a sudden it's like, well, yeah, we really like Cassandra and all, but this is getting really expensive. Do I want to keep fighting the fight? And, you know, to Michael's point, it becomes, you know, what's the ROI there and how long is it going to take that broker to dig out of that hole that's been created? Because, you know, Michael, you're right. We're not cheap. Good lawyers are not cheap. And it takes a lot of time to fight one of these effectively.
Brian, I want to go back to this comment real quick. What is this? So, I've heard of recruiters having a confidential conversation with someone and then going to their company and whistleblowing, going to their company Wait, hold on.
I've seen it. I've seen the proof. I've been involved in those. I think it is one of the
most. So could you explain what they mean? Like, did
For instance, employee X is at a certain broker, has a restrictive covenant, is considering making a move. And in Ohio, in Kentucky, where I primarily practice, it does not violate any restrictive covenant to prepare to compete or to consider a job offer. Okay. That is fundamentally not prohibited by the courts, by any agreement. Well, this individual discussed that possibility with a broker, and when it didn't come together, the broker then basically reported back to his employer shortly after he resigned, within like a couple of days after he told him he was resigning, and they started sending nasty grams to him and to the potential where he was going to go, and he ended up not going anywhere. But he did end up resigning from the other. But you know, he had to come. He had to hire me. I had to send letters.
Oh my God! Oh, you know,
Jesse, back and forth. I mean, it didn't cost him a ton of money, but it cost him something. And you know, frankly, if I've had recruiters call me in my career, luckily I'm at a great place, and I've got my hand on the wheel here, along with a couple other folks, and Brett, who was on with me back in April, is part of our management group, our shareholder group here. And, you know, I've got a great place and I'm practicing law. I don't want to go anywhere else, but I still have recruiters call me, you know. But my expectation was back early in my career, when recruiters would call me, is that I'm dealing with someone who's ethical, who's trustworthy, who's not going to reveal the confidences, just like my clients expect me to do the same. And, yeah, you know, I think Dan's comments about, you know, a non-ethical recruiter, I can't disagree with that. I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, is that, that, that would, is,
I mean, that doesn't, on, I mean, I would
that
agree.
That doesn't happen, Brent?
That's a non-ethical recruiter. Does that happen? That doesn't happen. I mean, that's just dealing with a isolated situation. But I have a question, Brian, that maybe you can answer, because I think this comes up even from the company standpoint. I remember over the years, we've talked to some companies that, like, they would sneak in a sign-on bonus, right? Here's $500.
Hold on. Before we get into sign-on bonuses, I want to go back to that, though. So recruiters do not play both sides like that? Or do they play both sides?
I'm not going to talk to a candidate and then all of a sudden call their company and be like, hey, so-and-so is trying to bounce out of there. Like, that's unethical. You wouldn't do that. You're rolling someone under the bus. You're only as good as your word in the relationships that you build, right? Because we get a lot of intel. I can't speak for other recruiters, but like my phone, like it's like Adam Schefter on NFL Sunday, right? You get a lot of very, very detailed information. I know when M&As are going to happen. I know when people are going to be let go. I know a lot of important things. So you have to be able to know how to keep your mouth shut. And that's why people respect and trust you. That's a key thing.
Yeah,
there.
I agree.
But that what I was talking crazy. About Brian is I know companies that will sneak in a sign-on bonus. The reason they do that is because they want to be able to enforce that non-compete, because now there's a monetary exchange. What's the situation there?
Well, again, that's a state-by-state basis. It depends. I mean, to Cassandra's point that she made earlier, continued employment can be sufficient consideration in most states, but some states do require additional compensation just beyond the commencement or the continuation of the relationship. So it depends on the state law there, but Brent, to that specific point, it's the company or the brokerage covering their butt to make sure that there's no question about consideration.
And Brian, do recruiters have to disclose when they have conflicts of interest? Like, yeah, I can imagine recruiters like have individuals, but then they have companies too. Like, do you have to disclose that?
Good question. You can't take people out. So you just don't work with everybody and you have very strategic relationships. So I can only speak for us, but we turn down a lot of business because I don't want to help somebody go in if I'm going to have to pull people out or if people are coming to me to get out. But okay. Another thing I was going to ask Brian, because I think this is pertinent to people that sign these agreements. What's a situation when a company lists specific either companies, like, hey, you cannot go to these four or five companies, number one, and then number two, state-by-state basis. Like, there's some big brokers, which I won't name, which literally carve out every 50 state you cannot work. Is that enforceable if it's that broad, or not even broad, that narrowed down?
I think if you narrow it to certain companies that you can't go to these, that's certainly better than the blanket, you know, you can't work against any competitor. And that means everybody in the brokerage world or everybody in the transpo world. That's certainly better. I'm not saying it's good. It's better. If there's other limitations, like you can't work in certain states, again, it's better. Is it more enforceable? I mean, you got to dial deeper into the language, but it's better than the blanket all 50 states or nationwide, you know, nationwide non-compete.
Mm-hmm. Vitaly asked a question that I was curious about too, Brian. Can a candidate that loses both an opportunity and their current employment because of a non-ethical recruiter playing both sides seek legal recourse against that recruiter?
Maybe. It'd be interesting to see where that goes. I mean, the question becomes, did you have a...
You can,
Michael,
I mean, come on.
Michael's got it. File that suit, friends.
You can file anything and go to mediation.
That's not unfair. That's not unfair.
Okay. That's interesting.
So the biggest win I ever had was when I went to mediation because I sued someone for fraud and tortious interference, and I didn't have an agreement with them. They pulled some stuff in a business I'd taken over. All I had to do was file a lawsuit. Ooh. And the conversation was basically like, look, I'm going to pop you in the mouth for 15 grand. You want to pay your lawyer? You want to pay me today? And mm-hmm. we settle this and we agree to what you can and can't do. And I knew I didn't have anything. I told the media I didn't have anything. But the reality is I knew I could get 15 grand out of that guy. And I already had an injunction. You know, I'd already shut his business down for 2 weeks. So that's the reality, is it's not like the people talk about what the agreement does and doesn't do. And that's great to talk about. But when you go to court or somebody files something, now we're just racking up dollars and it's a business deal. That's the reality, is most of these things don't go to trial and they're business deals.
Yep, it's so true.
Like when you get past just the Brent's trying to recruit 20 salespeople to go start a new office from company X, and you get into real agreements, they're just business deals. What do I really want to accomplish? What do you really want to accomplish? Let's agree to some terms. That's really what happens. And then lawyers get paid on both sides. And all I'm saying is, if you negotiate that up front and just say, hey, how do we break up? If I want to leave, how do I leave and how do I leave you well? Mm-hmm. And so like we can like
go down talk about that
wormhole all day long and bitch about the state of the industry. And I don't have a problem doing it. But I think that like there should be an ethical responsibility from recruiters and attorneys to say, like, what's the right way to do this? What's the right way to construct things so that people can have careers? And then I'd kind of like to know, like, Brent, are there clients you don't take because you know the way they treat people, or you know, like, I mean, how do you feel about it? Like, would you stick somebody somewhere that has a bad non-compete?
No way. 100%. No way. We ethically will not work with those companies, because at the end of the day, we want to put people in situations to win that maybe they could not do on their own, right? Like, we are the master of opening doors. So if I was to put somebody into a situation where they had to sign a bad non-compete, am I really helping them? Am I really bettering them as a personally and professionally? No. And so I just would never agree to work with a company that has a gnarly non-compete. No one wins in that situation.
So before we get into how to negotiate these non-competes, I saw Dan had another really great question. Brian, maybe you could help us with this, because I was curious about the same exact thing, which is, how would the increase in remote work impact the enforceability and legalities of non-competes? Like,
yeah, you know, it's
in my head. I'm like, now it's actually good.
That's a hell of a good question, because you've got, you know, you've got IT security issues, you've got hard copy document security issues. There's a lot of issues. I mean, Dan, that's a hell of a question. I'll be honest, it's one that scares the crap out of me in remote IT world. I can tell you, I've got a case right now. No, it's not a transpo, it's not a brokerage, it's not anything that kind of intersects with what we're talking about today. It's actually a service company. Okay, so bear with me for 30 seconds because I'm kind of lay the hypo out there, is customer service rep is working from home. They're all working remotely. Company redirects phones to everybody's computer that patches into their VoIP phone. Customer calls in to the service provider. CSR picks up the phone for company, you know, ABC company, and this customer requests service at their home. Sorry, we don't have anybody available, but let me give you the name and number of my dad's business that does the same thing, and my dad would be happy to come out and service your, let's call plumbing, and he'd be happy to come out and provide that service to you, and then CSR gives lead to dad who goes and services it, and guess what? Screws it up. And then the customer again calls in and talks to somebody else, and we found out that CSR was redirecting business opportunities to dad's company.
Oh my God. I've heard of that before.
So welcome to the impact of COVID world on call center CSR situation.
Yep. So I had, let's start from the beginning for those of you who are now just tuning in, because I see we have a continued growing group. Oh, look, Steve Van Auden's in the house. This is an honor. We are going to talk about how to negotiate these contracts, which I have the three best people to do this. But I want to start with the easiest thing, because my little brother, Chris Gaines, I tried to keep him out of freight, but he got into freight. And he was interviewing with a bunch of companies. Just graduated from college. He's my wee little brother. And when he was interviewing, I consistently told him, I want you to ask if there is a non-compete. Mm-hmm. Not only like Brent, these recruiters he was talking to, they were like the in-house recruiters. They weren't like you because it was an entry-level position. You know, he was talking to their intro. They didn't even know the answer. So I was like, make sure they ask their leader. And I said, here's the word non-compete. And Chris, although being around me a lot, he was like, non-compete. And I was like, it means you can't go work for one of their competitors. And he's like, I just want a job, Cassandra. He's like, I want a great job with a great company I'm going to grow with. I'm going to love them. I'm going to love my leader. And I'm like, yeah, that's how you feel now. And I said, but once you get in freight, it's hard to leave. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about the future too. And I could tell he just wasn't like registering it. And I said, if you sign a non-compete, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
I'll kill you. And he was like, okay. And so he ended up working for a really great company now, JB Hunt. But it was interesting to talk to a 22-year-old just graduated from college. The last thing he's thinking about or even knows about is a non-compete. So how do you negotiate those when you're just an entry level? Because I told him no. I just said no.
Yeah, I think that that's an important thing because, again, these kids have no idea. If we leave people with nothing else, it is a conscious awareness of like, get that information, get a copy, know what you're signing, have somebody look at it, right? And somebody through usually one call away has an uncle, a friend, you know, person they went to college with, whatever, that can take some eyeballs on it. But you got to get the right people to do that too. Honestly, if I was a new person coming into the industry, I would just pivot completely and just not even go that path. The hard part is these kids are just coming out of college.
Yep.
It's probably an Inc. 500 company. They want to make mom and dad proud, make sure that their, you know, $80,000 they just spent is worthwhile. And that's where it gets tricky. But, you know, the biggest thing is when these companies don't necessarily disclose it, they're not going to go to the job fair and be like, hey, by the way, we have a non-compete that you're going to sign here. It's going to work out, but happy hour is awesome, right? It's not going to happen. That's not how the game is played. So I think if nothing else, transparency is important, educating people to know what they're potentially going to sign. And the matter of fact is this, they can shoot themselves in the foot. Like that's a short money, short vision dynamics to go down that path. And you might be there for 18 months, but it's going to hurt you for the following 18 months when you've actually gotten better and are more valuable on the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody asked a question about whether or not leverage. Someone has leverage.
Yep. I love that question. No.
And so, I mean, I think that's the point. Cassandra and I talked about this earlier this week, like, leverage is a good question, but the important thing I think that Cassandra's doing is the industry needs to have these conversations. Before forums like this, these conversations only happened, you know, in a letter writing campaign between Brian and the other side or in a mediation. That's the only time they happened. And nobody, I remember when I learned about non-competes, I wanted to leave my company and my attorney friend said, hey, probably need to go talk to this lady. And she walked me through it. And she taught me how to leave hey, this is what's going to happen. This is how this works. I can probably get you back to work and not enforce the non-competition, but the judge will definitely enforce the non-solicitation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I mean, yeah, I think if enough recruiters stopped recruiting for crappy companies and enough people started saying no, yeah, then you have all the leverage in the world.
Mm-hmm. I also told my little brother,
won't go to work for you.
Yeah. And I also told my little brother, though, is that I said to him, make sure the only way you can have leverage is if you have other options. Mm-hmm. So when he was interviewing for JB Hunt, he kept calling me. He was so excited. He loved them so much. And I'm like, I don't care if you love them. I said, I want you to interview with these two other companies. I said, because if they turn around, come back and say like really low numbers or something you need to negotiate, vacation, that when you're an entry level, all you got is, hey, I've got this offer over here. So you got to work twice as hard to make sure that you are not just interviewing for one company. You have to be interviewing for multiple. And that's hard. I know it is, but that was the only leverage that ever really worked. Except for you're just not going to work in that industry or for that company. Mm-hmm. You're just going to go jobless, which I don't know how many like young people would truly make that decision.
Well, Barry, I will tell you, lots of people enforce non-competes on a 25-year-old kid that worked at a company for 1 to 3 years. I've seen people enforce non-competes over
all the time, every single day.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually the problem.
Yeah.
Now
Barry, I don't know where Barry is or where he's working or who he's associated with, but I can assure him here in Claremont County, Ohio, the company we've talked about a few times, I could probably show him 100 to 150 lawsuits filed in the last.
Yeah, Barry's comment was years. Nobody is enforcing a non-compete on a 25-year-old kid that has worked at a company for 1 to 3 years. The focus needs to be on people who've worked at the brokerage for 5+ years and have a solid book of business. Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping Barry. Should be enforcing a non-compete.
And I'll even go one further beyond that. Not only will that company who shall not be named do that, but in addition thereto, they will pursue people on a 2-year non-compete when they've worked for the company, say 6 months, 8 months, nine mm-hmm. months, and they want to restrict them for 2 years after. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, but I mean, TQL is an easy target, right? But like, Global Trans has done it. PLS has done it. XPO. I mean, how many big companies do you want to name? I mean, the lawsuits are public. Go look. Like, they're all a matter of public record. Like, no, like, we're not defaming any of these companies. Like, there, you can look at any counties where they sue people and see what's there. Like, they all do it because it's in. So somebody asked a question about Kevin Nolan, like, basically just paying the legal fee. Some people do that. I mean, there's a big company in Chicago that paid a whole bunch of people in Chattanooga to just not work for 6 months so they could start a branch.
And on the flip side of that, I mean, I have some companies that we know that are like, you know what? I want to go get this person. I don't care what it's going to cost me. What's it going to cost me?
I've heard that too.
100 grand. Yeah. But you know what? This person's got a 10 million, 20 million book. I'm going to win that all day long. Now, is that ethical? I don't know. But do I understand it? Sure.
It's business. It's business, right?
Right. One way or another. So, I mean, the lack of consistency, I think, is the biggest frustration. But if nothing else, we just want to make people aware so that they are, you know, asking these questions, not going in blind, not acting surprised. Because, again, once you're in somewhere, like half the people on this call, if they were to pick up the phone right now and call their HR and ask for a document, what would happen? Nothing good.
They'd be fired.
That's a big red flag. Like, oh, what are they up to?
Yeah. So what do we do, Michael? You and I have both been in positions where we're negotiating non-competes for a job that we really love. What's been your advice for those who have experience and they are switching jobs and they're going to have to sign a non-compete and they don't currently have one? We can talk about the people who do have one in just a bit too.
Yeah, so I think... I got some really good advice when I went through my last search, which was, I got some advice earlier in my career about kind of like what you do between 25 and 30, what you do between 30 and 40, 40 to 50. Brett and I talked about this a little bit. So I think every search is different depending on the stage of your career. There are times you're going to have to sign agreements. Okay. So the first thing I would say is if you signed an agreement, save your money and be prepared to write it out. That's the easiest thing to do. All this back and forth that I've ridden them out two or three times.
Yep.
I've had great gigs in between them. I've learned a ton working in different contexts. I've never been to court. I've never been served. Like, you just go ride it out. And I have great relationships because I've never taken anything. I don't take a pencil when I leave a company, right? And so that's one thing. Like, if you have an agreement, like, there's a lot in the comments. Is this enforceable? Is that enforceable? Everybody calls Brian and wants him to do some, find his hat with his rabbit to get him out of it. You signed it. We're saying bad things about these companies, but I mean, it would only cost you a couple $100 to have an attorney review it and tell you, right, like, this is right, what you're like. You, we talk about it, Brent. Yes, do I think it's predatory when they bring them in and they give them beer and it's like a damn rush event instead of a hiring process, and they get them all hyped up and it's a month long process, and then like, oh, by the way, sign this.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Start a search over? However, you can read. Mm-hmm. Ask somebody what those clauses mean. Right. So the second thing I would say is that,
but sometimes, like, they bury them, you guys. I have to say, like, my goals, like hiring an attorney and spending, like, I send everybody to Brian. I say, they say the word non-compete to me, I send them to Brian. And I'm like, because Brian will quickly tell you what you need to know. You're not gonna spend $1 million. He's quick, he's got more than enough clients, he doesn't have time to F around with this stuff. So but Brian, for a layperson who's intelligent, went to college, grad school, all that stuff, it is hard to actually find language in the goddamn non-compete and then understand it as well, because then they put all these other provisions all over the place. You have to go find what the definitions are. Brent knows what I'm talking about because he's laughing.
Yeah, I mean, I've read so many of these.
No, you're 100% right.
No 10 are the same, right? It's like going to, you know, that's the thing too, is that people say, well, hey, I'm going to have a lawyer look at it. But you can go to 10 lawyers and get 10 different answers on how to handle things too. So there's so much disconnect, uneducation in this matter that just muddies the waters too, in reality.
Well, and the other thing, I mean, you'll get... Go ahead, Michael.
So going back to the advice piece, because we've done the whole first 45 minutes on how evil all the companies are, right? Don't do wrong shit and you won't get sued.
Yeah.
Ah, the best advice in the entire show.
To everybody out there that thinks they're getting a raw deal and I built my book of business and the company, like, don't do stuff you shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Don't steal things. Don't print lists.
Yeah.
Don't plan to leave with four of your buddies. Don't start your own LLC while you're still employed. Like, just don't do stupid stuff. All right.
Yeah. The other thing I would say, don't leave your brokerage on Friday. Go Monday to your new company and start calling the same damn people on Monday morning at 8:01. You are setting yourself up to just get your ass kicked in that situation.
Yeah.
And I've seen it.
I mean, Brian, if somebody came to you and said, get me out of that, you'd be like.
Yeah, that one. I'd be like, listen, it's just a negotiation. I mean, to your point before, at that point, it's just a negotiation. It's just a negotiation at that point.
So I think the other thing too is, like, one of my mentors told me on this next one, on this last situation, is find people that align with your values. So I think if you're looking for a job and you find someone that aligns with your values, so if your values are just, I just want to make money, I don't care, then just pre-negotiate your exit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're a leader, like if you're like director level above, like, just pre-negotiate your exit. Hey, I'll sit out for 6 months, a year, whatever you want. Like, what do I need to fulfill? What if you fire me for anything other than cause? Like, this is really easy. Like, you can ask an attorney for some help. Like, and companies that are paying, like, you know, if you're in a $120, $150, $200,000 bracket, companies are not surprised by that. Right. So I would say, if you're director, VP, like, just ask for that. Like, happy to sit out. Like, what are you going to pay me to do it? The second thing I would say is, like,
Mike Bledsoe actually just added another thing, is you can list, here are the competitors I won't go work for. List them out.
Yeah.
And here are the customers I won't solicit.
Or here are the customers that I get to protect. Like, I'm bringing this book with me. I'm bringing this book with me. I'm bringing these 10 clients with me, these 10 customers with me. If I leave, I get to take them with me too.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to Andrew. I mean, Andrew has been very public about his stance. The company that I went to work for now, they're like, look, anybody you bring, any relationship you bring us, we're grateful for it.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened. I mean, so going all the way back to the beginning of the show, ask for their agreements and their covenants up front and use that to qualify whether or not. Don't look at their YouTube. You want to know what a company values? Read their contract.
Yep. And think about what a weird relationship that is, right? Like, people are so excited to make a change and I'm going to go to this other company. You're already thinking about the exit. That's like dating someone and already thinking 2 years from now we're going to break up. But let's just see how this shakes out. It's a bad marriage from the start, too. It's a slippery slope.
And I'm saying that because I went through it. I went to work for somebody who, man, I loved this guy. I still love him to death. But the company had been established a long time. And I remember sitting in the HR office and reading it and going, I can't undo this. I'm here. Mm-hmm. When I left that business, I set that out because they have a reputation. I mean, when you leave that company, you are anathema. There's no, whether you burn the bridge or not, it's just like, you're for us or against us.
Yep.
And I left and I set it out. But I just remember that feeling of being so excited and then reading it and thinking, this is egregious. This is not even all the things that you say in your profession, right, Brian? This is overly broad and all this stuff. But just knowing, like, I got to sign it. I got a family. I'm a month into the process. I'm stuck. And there's no worse feeling than being stuck. So ask for it up front.
Yeah. Also, you guys, when you get bonuses, everyone, I'm telling you, almost every one of my friends misses this. I caught it, and that's how I got fired. Is when you get bonuses, especially stock, because they're going to make you sign in a stock something agreement.
Yep.
Brian, what is almost always in those stock agreements?
An even stronger non-compete.
Stronger, because the board had to approve them, and they're two years, and blah blah blah, and you can't negotiate them either, by the way, because it has to go through the board often to be negotiated. So they come to you and they're buried in there and they're hard to find. If you get stuck, remember there could be a non-compete and be ready for what happened to me, which was I said, no, thank you. Take your stock back. And they said, you're done on Friday if you don't sign that non-compete, because my boss immediately went, why isn't Cassandra signing a non-compete?
Yeah.
Because she wants to go work for her company.
We should do a show on how bullshit stock options are for most employees.
Oh, we should. Let's do one. Let's actually do it. I'll put it on the list.
they're lottery tickets, man.
They really are.
If you're a producer, if you're a direct contributor and somebody starts dangling equity, tell them you want to get paid a lot of money. Options are so dependent on so many things.
Yeah. We'll bring on Beth, Michael, and you come on too. And we'll talk about compensation. We'll talk about all that jazz too. The other thing that I wanted to touch on was I wanted to tell you guys, for those of you who don't quite have that confidence when you're interviewing to negotiate your exit, your non-compete, and what's going to happen when you're fired, I want you to remember a couple points. One is, often, if you had signed a non-compete and they fire you, the non-compete is still enforceable.
Yeah.
So Brian's going to give you a bunch of exclusions. He'll go into da-da-da. But I want you to remember that black and white rule, because most of the time, people are like, oh, they fired me. It's not enforceable. Oh, yes, it is, sweetheart. No. You can't go work.
Yeah. Voluntary or involuntary termination. Voluntary or involuntary termination. Yeah. It'll be right there in it.
Can you also talk about severance, like releases and severance agreements? Because there's the language of your onboarding, but then like, hey, we're going to severance you and we're going to. So can you kind of talk a little bit about what, I mean, I know we're almost done, but those are big ones. Like, somebody does a riff and they basically give everybody $5,000 to shut up. Can you talk about maybe what people should look for when signing those and taking their check?
Well, a number one, and again, you talk about, I've seen some pretty terrible stuff take place here in COVID world in 2020. But one of the big things I've seen is you've got some sort of restrictive covenant in an employment agreement, right? Well, then they come to you and they're doing a riff and they're like, hey, we're going to give you $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. Oh, but, and they just hand it to you. And but you start reading it again, read the fine print. You start reading it, you come to find out the restrictive covenant, the non-compete, the non-solicit, the trade secret language, and that maybe is even more severe than what you had in your original agreement. Well, guess which one applies? It's not the first one. It's not the one that was 6 months or 12 months. It's now the 5-year deal or the 3-year deal.
Yeah. And most of the time they're doubling down, right?
So what's that?
As most of the time, they're trying to double down, right?
Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, most of the time, it's just, hey, remember, I mean, again, when I'm doing them typically, and unfortunately, I had some clients that did, but it's, hey, just a reminder that sections 5, 6, 7 of your employment agreement dated X date are still in effect. And mm-hmm. don't go stealing clients, don't go stealing employees, you know, don't go bad mouthing the company because we're paying you severance to kind of let you go on.
Yeah.
And to help you out. So there's additional consideration there. But, you know, what I found pretty grotesque was where companies were not just doing the reminder, they were expanding them. And it's like, hey, wait a minute. To me, that's beyond doubling down. That's just pouring salt in the wound. It's bad mm-hmm. enough somebody's losing their job, but then you're going to make it even more difficult for them to move on. No, that's bogus.
So somebody asked a question, which is a good one. Greg, does severance or no severance impact the reasonableness of a non-compete? Which is, you could break this down to many, the answer down to many pieces, but go ahead, Brian.
No. I mean, the short answer is no, severance or not doesn't impact reasonableness. What impacts reasonableness is it reasonable given the expectations of the job, what you were doing in the job? Is it reasonable in terms of the employer's expectation as to what the employee is going to adhere to? The severance or lack of severance has zero impact on the reasonableness of a non-compete, because one's at the beginning of the relationship, one is at the end of the relationship.
So I want to make sure that nobody's getting confused. The non-solicits are more about your customers and the employees.
Right.
Non-competes is where you can and cannot go work. I want to make sure that everybody's clear about that. What we're talking about in this show often is, or has been mostly about, that non-compete. If you hear the word severance, getting a bonus and getting hired or getting a promotion, those tend to be the pieces that you'll see a non-compete. Be
get
silently
those ears, get those ears
in.
Open, get those eyes open. And as Michael has reiterated, talk to somebody that knows something about it. Just an ounce of prevention prevents a ton of pain.
Yeah. I want Michael, since you're my co-host for today, if you could wrap this up with any thoughts that you have about anything, and advice, if you have any extra, or you can just say, fuck it. Call it out.
So there's a lot of people, like, here's what I would say. Don't take some of the legal advice in the comments section. Don't do it. There's people like, non-compete for this. They're all wrong.
They're all wrong. Don't take it from Facebook either.
All of the current legal advice in the comments section is incorrect. Call Brian, call Cassandra, and don't call a recruiter expecting them to get you out of a situation you got yourself into, right? Save your money. If you're at a job you don't like, save your
friends,
money.
Yeah.
Save your, like, if I were to interview you and you had a strange job, you worked at a golf course for a year, I would understand why. Like, no judgment. Like, there will, and if you think like that this is the best opportunity you're ever going to get, it's not. Like, there's always something else.
Yep.
There's a lot of recruiters that can find you your next deal. Like, you're not stuck if you feel stuck. I think that's the big thing I would say. If there's anybody that leads an operating company and you're doing some of the stuff we've talked about, I would just beg you to reconsider.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're on YouTube talking about how great your culture is and you're burying some horrible employment agreement in an electronic HR onboarding doc when there's 20 other people in the room all just clicking the DocuSign.
Yep. Fucked up, man.
Don't be that asshole. Mm-hmm. Don't put a bunch of ping pong tables and free beer Friday and talk about your culture. And then don't do that. Like, don't be that guy. So if you're an exec and you're doing that, like, you are what's wrong. I'm just going to tell you that. Like, you're what's wrong with the business. Don't be that guy. That's all. And get a mentor. Like, I have mentors that saved me so many mistakes, so many like things I would have gotten myself into or things I didn't sign or wouldn't sign. There are tons of people in this business that are really good at what they do, that run great companies.
Yep.
That will help you, that will talk to you.
I like that idea a lot. I like that's a great nugget right there for sure.
Yep. Well said. I would like to say that thank you to OTR and Swan Leap for promoting the show and making it possible for us to be here. Please give them shout outs in the comments and when you see their executives. To my three amazing guests, Brent, Brian, and Michael, I cannot thank you guys enough. This has been a very high energy hour and a great way to end the episode. So thank you very much. And we will see you guys on the next episode of Mad Gains. Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend. See you later.